welcome to a special edition of Bookmark, at least in my mind, a great friend of Mother Angelica and the networks for many years. Author is Sister Breege McKenna, the one and only. Two books, Miracles Do Happen and The Power of the Sacraments, published through Servant and available naturally through the EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. Speaking of all things Catholic, it's wonderful to see you, Sister.
It's wonderful to be back with you.
You always bring such a presence of peace and healing by your presence here at EWTN.
Well, I love coming. I've been coming to EWTN, Doug, for about 45 years.
Right. You were here before there was an EWTN, weren't
you? Oh, yeah,
there was
no EWTN. There was just Mother Angelica and five sisters and her mother.
Right, exactly.
And I came here because I was giving a priest retreat with a priest called Father Harold Cohen.
Oh, sure. He used to be here, and he was out of Louisiana.
That's right.
And he used to be here a lot.
He and I give a priest retreat for 20-something priests and the bishop, Anglican 20-some priests and their bishop. And somebody said to me at the time, you should go see Mother Angelica. Mm-hmm. And I thought, a very unusual name, Mother Angelica. And I said, well, I have 54 kindergartners. I don't think she'd appreciate me coming with them. But I came following summer for a couple of days. Oh, she was great. Mm-hmm. She was a legend, or is a legend.
Right. Could you tell right away when you first met her that there was something special about her?
Oh, yes, I could. Can I tell you my first encounter?
Yeah, sure.
Well,
yeah.
When I arrived, you see, I had just received my own physical healing, miraculous healing, and then I got this gift of healing that I told Jesus, I don't want any gift of healing, Jesus, you just keep that yourself. And I fought it because I love my work, I love teaching, and anyway, eventually, it's in the book, of course, the Lord showed me that I was just the instrument. But you know, as an instrument, you have to know some things because you can't be totally dumb going it. So I decided to come over to Mother Angelica, and I brought a big bag of books. I didn't know anything about any of the anatomy, so I thought, I have to find out why you're healed and why you're not healed and all. So I came, and one day I was sitting in the chapel at Adoration, in the little chapel, and Mother Angelica comes in, and she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to learn reasons why you're healed and not healed. And she says, from where? And I said, well, I have all these books of very famous healers, and put them away. And she takes me by the hand, and I can still see her limping up, and she brings me right up in front of the monster, and she says, that's the healer. Forget styles. They're all people who learn styles. He's the healer.
Right.
She says, you spend time with him. And was the best advice, because you know, in that kind of a ministry, people do copy styles, the shake, or they do things, and she'd say to me, that's not real.
You have to be who you are.
You have to be who you are. And she was always saying to me, you know, whenever you have faith, you have one foot in the air, one foot in the ground, and a wheezy feeling in your stomach. And one day she said to me, you gotta pray, Sister Breege. I've $30,000 I need. I thought, God, $30,000. That time I thought, a fierce lot of money to owe somebody.
Right,
and you have
back in the day, it was especially a lot of money.
So I went to breakfast, and I mean, this is first half. I'm sitting at breakfast, and this nice businessman came in with his briefcase and sat down to have breakfast. And Mother Angelica comes in, and she says, hello, Joe, or whatever you call it. And he said, Mother, you're in need. And she said, hell, I am in need. I have this dish coming today, and I have no money to pay for it.
Oh, right, yeah, sure.
He made a check out for $30,000there and then. I was gobsmacked. I thought, well, that's really faith. And she taught me a lot, and she taught me a lot about common sense and, you know, down to earth.
Let me ask you, for your experience in dealing over the years and talking to Mother, what would you think would be the most surprising thing for somebody watching the network to learn about her that you saw in her?
Well, I learned that holiness is not, people mix up holiness with being very pious and Mother Angelica's own words were to me, and it really fits her into it. She used to say, you see all these people who wrote the lives of the saints, they should spend 20 years in purgatory.
Yeah,
they're
butlers.
Not
she wasn't big on butlers.
Right. And she, you know, she had such a beautiful, deep faith, a sense of humor and common sense. That's what I loved about her. Because I pray I have a good sense of humor. I hope I can laugh at myself.
Yes.
And she wasn't afraid to be, she, political correctness didn't exist then.
Right.
She would just tell it as it is, you know. And I think those things, her character was very appealing because you'd never expect her to be able to accomplish what she accomplished. And she wasn't enamored with people with big jobs.
Right, not at all, no.
That didn't, you know. And I learned from that because in the 50 years I've been minister, I've met kings and presidents and all. And I always think of Mother Angelica, just be yourself. You can't be somebody else. You're not real.
Right.
It's true.
Well, let me ask you about your situation, because you had a healing, and then you in prayer were told that you had a healing ministry. And one of the things which you alluded to there in talking to Mother Angelica also was the idea, and you talk about a little bit, the fear of becoming pride-filled. Where the idea that you talk about, the idea that you started to feel like all these people are coming to me to be healed as if somehow I'm some special healing person rather than a conduit of God.
Oh, yes. I was very aware that a healing ministry is one of the most dangerous ministries. And when people say to me, oh, I'd love the gift of healing, I look at them and think, what?
Mm-hmm.
Because, first of all, pride, yes. Mm-hmm. Secondly is people make you into a star or celebrity, mm-hmm. and then you begin to think, well, I'm different.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, in the ministry, I was very aware myself that I was drawn, people were coming to me, but they weren't going to Mass. And they were saying, oh, sister, could I just touch you? Got any wee relics? Let me think, there's a what? I went to Lourdes,
right.
To pray to Our Lady, to beg Our Lady to help me, because I felt what I'm doing is not different than the sisters in my congregation, because they're teaching, they're nursing, they're whatever they're doing. And just because I happen to have this gift, which is a big responsibility, because Jesus said, one day when I was looking at an image of the Sacred Heart, I heard in my heart the Lord saying, I have gifted you with natural gifts, for good personality, good sense of humor, but you must not use those gifts to draw people to yourself. You must use them to draw people to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so ever since then, I say that, you know, people say, oh, Sister Breach likes to talk. I talk to everybody. Anybody that'll talk, I talk about Jesus to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't start right away. I get them interested. I can talk about soccer, football. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about them much, but I talk about them. And it's like a hook. Say to me, what do you do, sister? And that's my fishing bait.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot of things like that. Now, over those years, I now, after going to Lourdes, Our Lady showed me that the most important thing for me, which the Lord gave me, was to promote the Eucharist and the real presence of Jesus. And to Father Kevin came into my life then, way back early, and both of us would carry on these big Eucharistic healing services where the focus is completely on the real presence.
Yeah, I remember we got to attend one in Fordham years ago in the early 90s, and it was very powerful.
And 40 and 50,000 in stadiums.
Right, right,
And they were focused on, like, you know, when I went to Kenya, thousands.
Yeah, you go all over the world.
Yeah, we would all. Now Father Pablo.
Right.
Now, Doug, I compare myself to a turtle on rollerblades.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was going slowly along after Father Kevin passed to the Lord. And then along comes a young Spanish priest who's wonderful. But he has me flying around the world with him.
He's from Spain, but a missionary priest, right?
No, he's a diocesan priest from the Diocese of Madrid. And he worked in the Ukraine. I was telling you should have him on sometime. He's really got a great story. And then he went from there.
You were pitching Father Mitch, right? Is that what you were doing?
I was pitching Father Mitch. He went to Costa Rica and... I'm sure he wouldn't mind me telling you, that he was very influenced by his uncle, who was the late King of Belgium, Budwin, and he's going to be beatified. So I knew King Budwin very well, and that's actually how we say Budwin and Father Kevin sent him to me, because he's everything I would want to work, because he loves the church, he's a wonderful ministry, but he has to become aware that I could be his mother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like double his age, and he wants to go on his day off.
You mean energetic wise?
Scuba diving and all those things.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, but he's a great ministry to priests, too.
Well, how did you get, you had this healing that then you you know, you talked to Mother, and it was around 76 or so when you started working with Father Kevin, and at the intercession for priests, right?
It started like this. I knew Father Kevin's family. He's one of 15. Okay. 15 of them.
Yeah, and his brother was married to Dana.
Yes, right, that's right. And Father Kevin's brother, Gerald, kept telling me, my brother would love to meet you. Mm-hmm. He's starting a ministry to priests. And I really wasn't that interested in meeting because I was already in this ministry in Latin America and that, and I was home to see my dad. And so I thought, But anyway, he got me to go. So I went to meet Father Kevin, who said, the last thing he wanted to see was a nun home from America that thought she had a ministry to priests and the gift of healing. And he was up to his eyes founding a new program called Intercession for Priests, which he got the idea from Father George Kosicki. Remember George?
Oh, Father George. Yeah,
yes,
I love Father George.
George. Very well, too.
Especially he was very much into, he was Stockbridge and Divine Mercy.
Right, Divine Mercy. And he was also into, way back in the Charismatic Renewal, he was into the Intercession for Priests, a program much different than we have, but he took the framework from George.
Okay.
And I went to see him that day. And that day I got a prophetic word for him because he felt he needed to do something because many priests were leaving, young priests, and he was in the seminary in All Hallows. And he thought, what he saw with George when he was over in America, that maybe the thing they need to do is start interceding with Jesus for the priesthood. And he came back and he started the program. Well, he thought the seminary would be full. Two turned up, and the auxiliary bishop said, it only takes two to intercede. I appear on the scene and I get a prophetic word about Patrick Pio and the power of intercession, and that things start small, not to give up.
Nice.
Anyway, he started, and 50 years later, we went to over 100 countries. Thousands of priests have come, and every year since, we have a big gathering of priests who come to the Intercession for Priests, and it's permanent in Germany, permanent in Poland, and permanent in England and Ireland. And we framed work our retreats, so we give a lot over the years, diocesan retreats in the five continents.
Where would you say in your experience of traversing the world where you're seeing, let's say, the greater number of vocations in those countries? We read about Africa and things like that.
Well, you know, in Africa. But you know, we just give a priest retreat, this is Father Pablo and myself, 2 years ago in the Philippines. We've given many, but in the Philippines, they registered 2,000 priests, 33 bishops, and the nuncio, all in one retreat. And Indonesia's the same. Indonesia, we get huge gatherings of young priests, and the same in many of the countries. But I would say that, yes, Africa, but I think there's a beginning to generate, like, for example, in Spain, I'm very surprised, Father Pablo, there are more diocesan priests now in Spain than in the religious communities.
Oh, really?
They're getting vocation. So,
why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's to do with the family. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that in Spain, I was very impressed by the young families because nobody's having children. If you go to places, they're walking around with prams with dogs in.
Right.
And I'm saying, look at that lovely lady taking her grandchild out for a walk, and I get up beside her and she's a dog. Or you see the people have just want two children, contraceptive mentality.
Right.
And that's why I think when Jesus showed me the priesthood and called me into this ministry to priests back in 72, you know, in 72, I had a 3 to 4 hour experience in the chapel, like a mystical, of the priesthood from heaven's side.
Really?
Yes, it was beautiful because I was very critical of the priesthood. And it's very easy, you know, Doug, to be critical because people criticize the priest for everything. And it's easy because they don't say mass and they don't do this. And so I was always saying to Jesus, what's wrong with the priesthood? Because they were leaving in the 70s.
Right,
One day I went in the chapel and I just said that to the monstrance to Jesus. And I heard, what do you mean, what's wrong with the priesthood? I'm going to show you from heaven's side what a priest is. I cried because I realized on that day that the priesthood is not a job, nor a profession, and it's not whom we think would make good priests. It's whom the Lord calls. And that day showed me two visions that I went to see my bishop about, and this was in the 70s. The first was a terrible famine of the Word of God and the Eucharist, a place that's been very barren because of shortage of vocation. And the Lord put in my heart and said, it's not because I don't fulfill my promises, but my people no longer accept my gift of priesthood. Mm-hmm. They reject it. And then he showed me the contraceptive mentality. I don't want children, and I don't want my child to be a priest. And he's one of the missions he told me.
Right, because I can't afford to have the one or two children I have.
I want grandchildren. Right, and to discourage them, what I've seen.
Right.
And I felt that the Lord said, I want you to go into the Word and speak to the laity about the gift of priesthood, what it is, and talk to them that it grows in their families. It comes from their homes. And that was the first thing.
Right.
Well, I had great opportunities because I would go into stadiums, and like my first big experience of that was in when I was down in Brazil. I had like 45 or 50,000 in a stadium because people come for healing.
Right.
Healing attracts crowds.
Right, sure.
And I spoke in the priesthood, and I looked out at the sea of people, and I said, there has to be some young men out here who have a call to the priesthood, and don't procrastinate. If you feel called, go talk to your bishop.
Mm.
15 years later, Father Kevin and myself were giving a retreat, and three men came up and told me they all belonged to the National Guard, and the same day they responded that I called. Then Cardinal Pell, who came to see me not long after he got out of prison.
Great loss to the church. Great loss.
Cardinal Pell came to see me after he was his prison term, and he said to me, Breed, you got me my secretary.
No.
I met this young man in Australia, and I got the sense that he had a priestly vocation. Mm-hmm. And he was an accountant, a priest. Father Pablo's brother was 6 years an economist in Pricewaterhouse over in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the same sense. And I said to him, did your brother ever think of being a priest? He said, ask him. 6 years. He's fourth year in Notre Dame Seminary in New Orleans now.
Mm-hmm.
And these kind of things happen because people are inclined to blame the priesthood for the weaknesses in the church and for the pedophile. All these things were terrible. But you can't blame the priesthood.
Right, because, well, they're up front. They're the first person you can deal with. And then also, as we know, and I think you talk about in your book, we all know that what is the greatest attack we have now is on the family, and in the church it's attacking the priesthood,
and
right?
And the second vision that God showed me that day was a group of bishops and priests, and Jesus was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see it was like a movie screen over the top of the altar, and he was crying, and he said, these are the men I have chosen, but many of them reject my teaching, many of them will turn away from me, they will no longer see it as a gift, they will seek the wisdom of the word, not my wisdom. So I want you to go into the world and speak to my priests, mm-hmm. affirm them, encourage them, and challenge them. So I went to see the bishop. Now, the bishop was not a charismatic, outgoing, and lively person. He was the first bishop of the Diocese of St. Petersburg.
Okay.
And Bishop Chard. So I went in, and I told him my experience. And he sat there for a minute, then he got up and he went to the window. And this was in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned around very quickly and he looked at me. And he said, I see on the horizon a great crisis coming to the church.
Hmm.
And when these crises come, God will always be prepared for somebody like you. He said, hold on to your vision, mm-hmm. be obedient to your order, and if this is of God, you will see it happen.
Right, that's what Mother always said with any of these things. If it's God's will or there's God's mind, it'll survive. If it doesn't, it won't work.
And like now, even when Kevin died, I got a lot of invitations, which was very hard on your own to priest retreats because I don't really believe in doing mine. But that's why when Father Pablo came along to visit me, and I heard from
that was an answer to your prayer.
Oh, but I wasn't even expecting because I was thinking of retiring. Mm-hmm. So I'm nearly 80, so he came. And he was down in Costa Rica doing a wonderful mission down there and great with young people and had given priest retreats. So I got this word, I'm sending Pablo to you. Together you'll minister to my priests and people of the world.
Mm.
We've been 26 countries and he's only with me 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And their priests.
Yeah, I looked at your upcoming schedule there.
It's busy, isn't it?
It's pretty busy, right?
You're an old lady like me.
Yeah.
And so God sent him to me because, you know, I have a great belief that the biggest weakness in the priesthood is not celibacy and all these things, is divine faith, is believing in the priesthood,
mm-hmm.
is believing that you have, I say it to the bishops all the time, I mean, do you realize the only requirement for Matthias to become an apostle and to go out there as one of the bishops in the church was to haven't been with Jesus from the beginning? And I said, to believe and to have that. And I see it with the priest retreats we give. I see it in Germany because, you know, the church is going through a hard time. And those priests called me during COVID and I talked and prayed with them to encourage them. And I think very many of the priests, the biggest grace they need is to be ministered to. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of personal ministry with them, like renewing of ordination around the monstrance. We do healing service with them, looking at Jesus.
So you see the seeds there. Oh. You see the new growth.
Oh, yes. And how they have persevered through these years when it's difficult for them. And they have each other.
Right.
It's become a very close bond between these priests at the intercession throughout the world.
Right. You know? One of the things that is interesting, one time one of the interviews we did years ago, and I think said something about, you know, with the Vatican II and stuff like that. Well, was it a good time for us to have Vatican II considering everything that was going on in the world? And I remember you saying, well, the Holy Spirit doesn't make mistakes.
No. Personally, I really am a great supporter of Vatican II because when I hear people say, oh, the church has ruined all this thing, and, you know, we had the Mass in Latin and we shouldn't, and rant and rave to me because they talk to me. And I look and I think, for one whole year, Pope John the 23rd, I was in the novitiate, we prayed for a new Pentecost. We got the new Pentecost. And you think of, you know, the updating, nothing in the Catholic Church, the dogmas and doctrines didn't change. It's like a spring cleaning, it got renewed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have all these riverlets of renewal, Cursia, Marriage, Encounter, all the lay movements and everything, which were all renewal in the church. And then you have, I mean, I answered Mass in Latin. I went to Latin Mass and I entered. I walked 3 miles every day to Mass, and it was in Latin. But I have to say that it was great when it got into the vernacular, when we were able to understand and everything. Mm. And I know that there's a great need for reverence and we have to get back to
right, I think that's
the mystery.
A big,
and that's why the
reverence, and I think a certain amount of of understanding how things are supposed to go in some way.
And the mystery of the Eucharist.
Right.
You see, this is where I get great opportunities because I talk to the people at parish missions. We did a lot of parish missions there during Lent. And I go through the sacraments and I tell them, look, at the Catholic Church has the fullness of truth. We can't be compromising and saying, well, we're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you're nice to people. I love Benedict Rochelle's. He used to say, when you say, Benedict would say to you, what's your bishop like? He'd say, he's a nice man. Nice man, don't burn at the stake. What's
there you
he
go,
like?
Right.
But, you know, to have zeal, that's my big prayer, Doug. I always pray, fill me with zeal for Jesus and the kingdom. The second thing that I've learned since I started working with Father Pablo, and I'm going to ask you this question, turn the tables.
Uh-oh.
Could you tell me, Doug, how many feast days are there in the Catholic Church to God the Father?
None.
None.
Right.
And Father Pablo says, you know, which is a beautiful thing because he has great devotion, great love for the Father, and he started the House of the Father down in Costa Rica, a retreat house.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, think about it. I think it was Father Mitch was saying that 50% of young people today are from single homes.
Mm-hmm.
Fatherhood is absent.
Right, that's right.
And fatherhood is absent in the priesthood. Like Father Kevin's old, and Father Pablo says the same, that kids are not the dad's best friend. He's the father, and they need a model. He says the father teaches them to say no, and the mother teaches them to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, sometimes in divorce situations, you got parents competing for the affections of their children, and you don't necessarily get the best, you know, the way it normally would be. Well, let's, in the closing 2 minutes, I wanted to make sure we talked about it, the big event you have happening in August in Ireland at Knock, right?
Yes. Yes, we have on the 4th of August, we have a special day where the Archbishop of Armagh, who's the primate of all Ireland, he's going to be the main celebrant. And we have the core groups which run the program coming from the four countries to the intercession. And every year, we started that many, many years ago to go to Knock to Our Blessed Lady to consecrate the priesthood and for the laity to participate in praying for the priest. So we start with, I give at this Jubilee now. I give a talk in the morning to the priests who come, and then we have a public holy hour for the laity, and it's all geared towards Thanksgiving and a rosary for priests. And then we have the 3 o'clock, we have an international mass where thousands come, and there'll be lots of priests to come celebrate. And at 3 o'clock, there's the anointing of the sick, which is always goes on there, and a big celebration. Then we leave Knock and we go to Maynooth, which is the National Seminary, and we hold the Week of the Intercession there every year.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So it's in gratitude for 50 years is a long time for it to keep, and it never lost its zeal or enthusiasm. And I'm there, and Father Jack Finnegan is a Salesian. He came, I think, the first day 50 years ago as well. Father Kevin went on to heaven, but Father Kevin's idea was the intercession is not my thing, it's to help. And we pray for renewal of ordination, we pray for healing, we have confession, we have adoration, just everything that's around the priesthood, especially the divine office and all. It's right. Beautiful.
And I'm sure you can find out information on the web, right, about
that? Yes, there's a website up, intercessionforpriests.com, and they'll find it on.
Okay, great. It's always great to be with you.
Great to meet you again.
Right,
thank
absolutely.
You.
Sister Breege McKenna, of course. Two of her books, which we talked about generally, Miracles Do Happen and The Power of the Sacraments, highly recommended, available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. I'm Doug Keck. This has been a special edition of Bookmark. We'll see you next time. Thanks.